They never slept two nights in the same bivouac. Between them, Tinat and Sududu knew all the back ways and hidden tracks through the forest. So they moved swiftly and secretly, avoiding well-travelled paths, covering much ground between one camp and the next. They went from village to village, meeting local magistrates and headmen who were sympathisers. All were incomers, and most of the villagers were loyal to them. They provided food and safe houses for the fugitives. They kept watch for Jarian patrols and warned of their approach. In each village, Meron and Tinat held a war council. "We are going back to our very Egypt," they would tell the magistrates and headmen. "Have your people ready to march on the night of the harvest moon." Tinat would look around the circle of faces that glowed with elation and excitement in the firelight. He pointed to the chart he had unrolled and spread before him. "This will be the route you must follow. Arm your menfolk with what weapons you have to hand. Your womenfolk must gather food, warm clothing, and blankets for their families, but bring nothing you cannot carry. It will be a long, hard march. Your first assembly point will be here." He indicated the place on the chart. "Move swiftly to it. There will be scouts waiting for you. They will have more weapons for your men, and they will guide you to the Kitangule Gap. That will be the main mustering ground for all our people. Be discreet and circumspect. Tell only those you can trust of our plans. You know from bitter experience that the spies of the oligarchs are everywhere. Do not move before the appointed time unless you receive direct orders from either Colonel Cambyses or me." Before sunrise they rode on. The commanders of the outlying garrisons and military forts were almost solidly Tinat's men. They listened to his orders, made few suggestions, and asked fewer questions. "Send us the order to march. We will be ready," they told him. The three main mines were in the southeastern foothills of the mountains. In the largest, thousands of slaves and prisoners toiled on the stopes, digging out the rich silver ore. The commanders of the guards was one of Tinat's men. He was able to spirit Tinat and Meron, dressed as labourers, into the slave barracoons and prison compounds. The inmates had organised themselves into secret cells and elected their leaders. Tinat knew most of the leaders well. Before their arrest and incarceration, they had been his friends and comrades. They listened to his orders with joy. "Wait for the harvest moon," he told them. "The guards are with us. At the appointed time, they will open the gates and set you free." The other mines were smaller. One produced copper and zinc. The alloy needed to turn copper into bronze. The smallest of all was the richest. Here the slaves worked a thick seam of gold-bearing quartz, so rich that lumps of pure gold gleamed in the light of the miners' lamps. "We have 15 wagon loads of pure gold stored in the smelter," the chief engineer told Tinat. "Leave it," Meron ordered brusquely. Tinat nodded. "Yes, leave the gold." "But it is a vast treasure," the engineer protested. "Freedom is an even greater treasure," Meron said. "Leave the gold. It will slow us down and we can find better use for the wagons. They will carry the women, children, and any men who are too frail or sick to walk."